You are listening to the Passion City Church DC podcast. To learn more about Passion City Church DC, including our location and gathering times, visit us online at passioncitychurch.com/DC. Today's talk comes from Pastor Ben Stewart and is a continuation of a series entitled Survival Skills.
Well, when I was in elementary school, we used to play this game in PE called Octopus. And the way Octopus worked, I don't know if you played it, is they would line all this up on one wall, and then they'd blow the whistle, and the goal was to run from that wall to run across and touch the other wall. It's not a particularly complicated game. The little twist is that they would pick one person and designate them it, and they would stand in the middle. And so as you ran from one wall to the other, the it person would tag you. But what would happen is if they tagged you, you didn't go out. You had to sit down wherever they tagged you, and you became a part of its machine of evil, right? You didn't have the autonomy of it, but you were suddenly part of his kingdom, and you were part of the problem for others. You would sit crisscross applesauce on the floor, and then you would put your hands out, and you would grab people, and as we went back and forth across the room, you would tag more and more people, and it'd get increasingly complex maze of little fifth grade enemies all over the floor, right? And that's what made it exciting. So I remember there was one day we were playing, and the first game I did pretty good. You know, it was okay. Made it a couple rounds back and forth, but got hit when it got more complicated. Second game, I was a little distracted, frustrated, got hit way too early, was a part of the it situation, far too early in the game. And so we only had time to play three. And so I remember when we got to the third game, I was like, man, I don't want to mess this up, you know? And so they blow the whistle. The first time's relatively easy. Second time, it gets complicated. Third time, it's getting more complex. And I remember we're getting towards the last time, and I look out, and I had barely made it to the wall, man, barely. And there's just an ocean of fifth graders just waiting to tag me. They look vicious. It's not a friendly place. And I'm like, man, this is bad. And so then I start looking like, who survived with me? Like, who's here? And there's only two other people. And I looked directly to my right, and it was Josh Mermis. And Josh weighed like 50 pounds soaking wet, right? He's like a terrified, small little man, and he's like shaking out of fear, right? And so I'm looking at him, and I'm like, yeah, he is toast. I don't even know how he made it this far. He probably did that whole like hug the wall thing and like act like he was tying a shoe, like, oh, no, I'm not playing. And then like I'm like, you're here by trickery. You're dead. He's not. There's no future for him. But then on the other side of him, there stands Brett Billick. Brett Billick went on to play football and lacrosse at Harvard. Brett Billick, a large, strapping, intellectual, winsome man. He was the picture of the all-American man, Brett Billick. And I remember Brett, at the moment I looked at him, he kind of looked over at the two of us and said, follow me. I know the way. And Josh and I looked at each other like, because we don't. And so they blew the whistle, and it was just the three of us. And so Brett took off, Josh took off, and I took off right on their heels behind them. And sure enough, as we're running, I'm just noticing we're kind of weaving through just outside the reach of hands. And I'm like, this is actually working. I remember at some point someone reached, and I kind of moved past them. And as soon as I did that, just a swell of pride, like, that's what's up, kind of landed on me. And like, I'm kind of good at this. And someone else was like, I'm like, no, son. And so I just start doing all my, like, I got this figured out. And so I'm dancing through the middle now, and then bam. No! I get tagged and I get to sit down. I'm part of the it. Whistle blows, game over! And I look up from my little seat of defeat, and there's two people standing that won the game. There's Brett Billick in all his glory, and there's little Josh Mermis, like holding on to his t-shirt, right? But I looked at that and I'm like, I lost and Josh Mermis won? Like, how is that possible? Smarter than him. I'm more athletic than him. I'm more than him in so many ways. But then I realized it's not about intellectual capacity, and it wasn't about physical ability. It was about humility. Humility. I was proud enough to think I can do this on my own. And Josh, even though he was weak, he was willing to admit his weakness, and that made him wise. And so at the end of the game where I got stuck, Josh ran free. And one octopus, right? Why are we talking about that? Because that's the book of Proverbs, right? That's wisdom. That's what we've been talking about. wisdom in the Bible is applied knowledge. It's the word in Hebrew, chokmah. It's skill, the skill of living, that I understand how to apply principles to the way to live that make me successful. There are people you know in life that even though they might be intellectually brilliant, even though they might be wonderfully capable, you'll watch people that have all those abilities, talents, gifts get detonated by scandal or derailed by hardship or just stuck in resentments. And then you know other people in life that you look at them and they go, whatever comes their way, they just seem to bounce it and roll off. That you see some people that they're like, no scandal seems to stick. No problem crushes them. No difficulty ends them. They find ways around it. I just know these people that they're always finding a way to move forward. There's a graciousness to the way they move. They've got survival skills. They're wise. Right? And that's what this series is about. And in the book of Proverbs, there's four ways to get wisdom. The skill to be successful in life, the skill of wisdom, the street smarts of how to live. There's four ways to get wisdom. The first is to ask for it. That's what Solomon did as he looked at reigning as king. He said, I have the law of God and I have all these people to lead, but I don't know how to apply this to all the unique situations that life throws at me. So he asked God, God, give me a heart of wisdom so I can lead your people. And God commended him for that. And in the New Testament, we're called to do that. James, the brother of Jesus, said, does anyone lack wisdom? Let him ask for it. And that's what we're meant to do. God, I don't know how to handle some of these situations relationally, career-wise. I don't know how to navigate some of these difficult, complex waters that are in front of me in DC. I don't know. And the willingness to admit that you're weak is the first step on the path of wisdom. So we ask for it. Another way to get wisdom is in experience. School of hard knocks. That's why in the book of all through the Bible, elderly people are typically presented as more wise. Just becoming old doesn't necessarily make you wise. But the idea is the older you get, you can learn from experience, and experience is a great teacher. You can read the scriptures. You can read the word of God and it make you wise. We had a team day for all of Passion just this last week, and Mark DeMoss, who's been incredibly successful in business, was teaching us principles, business principles that apply to how to lead a church. It was a crazy informative seminar. But at one point in it, we were asking him about the way he's grown in wisdom, how he navigates difficult situations. And he said, I read a chapter of Proverbs every day, and I've done that for decades. He said, I've read the book of Proverbs over 350 times. And you're like, what? He said, yeah, and I just read it 5 minutes a day. He said, and people ask me all the time, are you really going to get wise 5 minutes a day? And he said, wiser than the people that spend those 5 minutes on Facebook. And we were like, oh, Mark. Gotcha, right? Touche, Mark. Well played. Read the word of God. That's why we have that Proverbs reading plan that you can text in on. So you can read along the book of Proverbs with us. We're just asking you to read half a proverb a day. We're just making you a half mark. You can go full proverb if you want because you read a little bit. It's going to make you wise. But the fourth way to get it is exposure to wise people. That I find people that know how to navigate the complexities of this world and I tuck in with them. The way to become wise is to walk with the wise. And that's what today's about. Today's about the company that you keep. It's about friendship. Now, let me say this. Some of what I'm about to say is somewhat obvious. And wisdom should be that way. It has a bit of a self-evidential quality to it. But the reality is our culture is ever decreasing in self-reflection. We just don't think about our lives that much. Like if I gave you a quiz on what's healthy food and what's not, we could probably identify the healthy food. We know how to eat to be healthy, but we don't do it. We know that if we don't get enough sleep, we're cranky and ineffective. But when Netflix asks you if you'd like to continue, we don't stop it. So I'm going to tell you things to be wise, and you're going to be like, I know, but I'm asking you what the wise do is they realize I need to learn, I need someone to lead me, and you're called in the book of Proverbs, examine your paths. Not examine what you know, examine how your knowledge has become decisions, because your decisions become a destination. What path are you on, and where does it lead? The book of Proverbs and this series about survival skills is asking you to consider what are the paths you're walking on. What is the company that you keep? Because everyone can tell you what they do. Not many can tell you why they do what they do. And the invitation of this series is to assess your life. Who am I running with? and where are they going? What are we doing here? And so let me start with some basics, and these will seem as self-evidential, but let me start with some basics. The first is this: we are hardwired for community. We all know that. We are built for it. But Proverbs 18:1 says this: whoever isolates himself, seeks his own desire, he breaks out against all sound judgment. I love the way that's written. The guy that isolates himself breaks out against sound judgment. It's the dumbest thing you could do. Isolation is not good for the human machine. We're not built to operate on our own. That's why a form of torture is to isolate people, put them in solitary confinement. That's one of the worst things we do to somebody. Let's just let them not be around other people. What happens? You slowly go crazy, start hallucinating, start talking to volleyballs, because there's something about the way you're wired that we need us, right? That we are built for a community. And isolation, there's a place for solitude, for self-reflection. But isolation, if I don't want to be around people, I'll get this on my own, will not give you greater self-knowledge. It will actually harden it. And the book of Hebrews says, let's not give up the habit of meeting together and be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. You can actually know yourself less by spending more time just alone, right? You lose perspective in isolation. You need us. Some of our worst decisions we make in isolation. I remember when I first met my wife, she was leading a group of young women, and they had made t-shirts for their Bible study, and it just said on it, Lone Rangers or Dead Rangers? And it kind of had a cowboy laying on the ground out in the desert, and you're like, that's harsh, but I respect it, because it's true. We're not meant to travel alone, so we're meant to live in community. But here's the other obvious thing: not all community is created equal. Some are better than others. And that's why in the book of Proverbs, you don't get out of chapter 1 before he starts to say, there are some people, son, that you don't want to hang out with. He says, my son, don't walk in the way of them. Keep your foot away from their paths. There's people that are going a direction. Son, don't roll with them. And then he points to other people in chapter 2. Walk in the way of the good. Keep to the paths of the righteous. There are some people you do want to be around and do walk with. And there's other people you don't want to be around and don't walk with. Why? Because there's a fundamental principle underneath both those, and that is your friendships shape your future. Your friendships determine your future. Your counselors influence your choices, and your choices will shape the consequences. Your people determine your path. That's true of all of us. So who's your inner ring? Who are you hanging out with? Because we are influenced people. We're influenced by our surroundings. And you've all seen that. I mean, there was the famous Ash uniformity test. They did it in the 1950s. They've been multiple tests since, you know, where they brought in a group of people and said, we're going to show you like a straight line and then three other lines labeled A, B, and C. And you have to pick which one's of equal height with the baseline. And one line is like clearly shorter and one's clearly longer and one's clearly the right one. And you just got to pick it. And when it's the control group, people got the wrong answer 1% of the time. They were easy decisions, right? But then what they would do is they would bring people in and tell them the same thing. You're all going to pick which one's right. But what they didn't say was everyone else in the room was an actor except one dude. And he didn't realize he was the test. And so they would do a couple of these, which line's equal, B, which line's equal, C. And then they'd get to one, which line's equal. And everyone in the room would pick the wrong line. Clearly smaller. They'd all be like, hey, oh yeah, hey, totally, yeah, hey. And you can watch the videos of the person like. And the first one, they'd be like, no, it's B. And everyone's like, all right. And then they would do it again. Which line is it? And they'd pick the wrong one again, pick the wrong one again. And 75% of the time, people would go against the obvious right choice because of peer pressure. 75% of test subjects at least once had somebody just fold like a lawn chair, and you can literally watch them in their chairs just slowly like slide down. I guess it's me. And you're like, no, it's not, dude. But over and over again, as we run that test, we are influenced by our peers, right? Who you walk with determines where you go, for better or for worse. And so the book of Proverbs will beg you over and over again, like Proverbs 13:20, whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm. You will learn the ways of the person you're around. Proverbs 22 says, make no friendship with a man given to anger, nor go with a wrathful man, lest you learn his ways and entangle yourself in a snare. It says, if you walk with the wise, you'll become wise. You'll start to think like them, decide like them, move with them. You hang out with an angry person, you're going to get more cynical too. You're going to get more bitter too, and you're going to start to sound like them. We've all watched that in ourselves. My wife used to make fun of me, like, nobody ever guesses I'm from Texas. I don't sound like a Texan unless my dad calls on the phone. And then I'm like, yeah, nah, we were down, old brother. And she's suddenly like, when did you suddenly become country, you know? And I'm like, what are you talking about? And I realize I just sound like my dad when I'm around my dad. Bizarre, right? But we all do that. You start to sound like who you're around. Watch with your roommates. Some of you know this. You've already started to dress alike, joke alike, smell alike. It's getting weird. It's getting weird. But that's the way the world works. We're like the people we're around, right? I remember when I went to seminary for the first time, school to study the Bible. I was asking a friend that was at that seminary, give me some advice on approaching seminary. And he said, man, you just want to make sure you don't fall in with the wrong crowd. And I was like, what's the wrong crowd in seminary? They drink caffeine, stay up past 10:30. Watch PG-13 movies. I was like, what? I mean, who are the bad guys in seminary? And he was like, no, man. He said, just watch. There's people who go there and they don't have a ministry heart to serve with the knowledge they're getting. Paul warns you, knowledge will puff up. He said, you'll see him. And as soon as I got there, he was right. There were guys that they were proud, arrogant. They're always criticizing professors or making fun of other people. They were negative. They wouldn't say hi to people walking. I'm like, you're going to go into ministry and you can't say hi to other humans? Like, dude, for real? Like, how's that going to go for you? And I realized there was a real toxic community in seminary. And then on the other side, there were people that wanted to learn the Bible because they had a white hot passion to serve the Lord and serve their community. And what I had to realize about myself was I'm not strong enough to hang in this group and not adopt their ways. I will. I don't want that to be true, but I know it will be true. And I don't want to do that. And so I realized I got to be around some of these other guys that are hope-filled, passion-filled, want to make a difference. And I got around these guys that we would sit in groups, guys from all over the world. Everyone that lived around me was from a different country and couldn't wait to go back to say the name of Jesus. And I would walk out of there with a fire in my heart and a passion in my mind that I was absorbing from them, because you'll become like who you hang with, right? Who determines where? You will become like them, and you will reap what they sow. Proverbs 22:10 says, drive out a scoffer and strife will go out. Quarreling and abuse will cease. Your life always filled with drama? You might want to look around at who you're hanging out with. I had a buddy that was in my Bible study in high school. When he went to college, he joined a fraternity, and I'm not harassing fraternities, but he got in with kind of a crazy group of guys. And so I remember when he got married that it came time to hang out, and it was me, him, and this wild group of guys were his best men, and I couldn't go to their bachelor party, which was great because one of his guys was a scoffer, and so they all went out to dinner, and at the end of it, his friend picked a fight, which was normal for them, but he picked a fight, but they all got beat up. And I got a phone call afterwards that they all just got stomped, you know, and I was like, oh, man, so glad I skipped out on that event, right? Because I'm not going to roll with y'all, man, because I know you're being crazy, right? And man, you drive that scoffer out, the quarrel's going to cease. And some of you always got dramas because you're running with the wrong crew. And that's why in the book of Proverbs, it says, man, the who's going to determine the where. Proverbs 4:14, do not enter the path of wicked. Do not walk in the way of evil. I love it. He says, don't even take one step in the path of the wicked. Why? Because there's a progressive searing of the conscience. There's a progressive comfort with the darkness. And he says, they begin to stumble into the dark and they don't even know where they're stumbling. One of the greatest movies of all time is Lonesome Dove, starring Robert Duvall, Tommy Lee Jones, about two Texas Rangers. I feel like I'm alone in that sentiment, and that's a little uncomfortable right now. So you all have your homework to do. It was a TV movie, Lonesome Dove, about two Texas Rangers driving some cattle up north. And they had a buddy that was a Texas Ranger, Jake Spoon. But Jake was a bit of an arrogant guy. And he got tired of hanging with them, didn't like some of their rules. So he went off on his own, found this other crew to hang with. And that other crew was kind of mean, but better than riding alone. So he would roll with them, and he saw they were disrespectful to people, but he was like, ah, whatever. He kind of liked being the moral one in a dirty crowd. Some of you are kind of like that. You sort of like being the responsible friend in an irresponsible zone because it makes you feel better about you. That was Jake Spoon. And then as he's rolling with these guys, they decide to rob somebody. And then they end up killing an innocent man. And he's at this moment where he's got to decide what's he going to do. And he doesn't condone their behavior, but he doesn't leave them either. And so in the end, when those men are captured, they're all getting ready to be hung. And who's going to do it? Some Texas Rangers. And so as he looks at his former community, he looks at them and says, you guys know me. You know I'm not like this. And one of the most telling scenes in the movie, they look at him and they say, Jake, you ride with an outlaw. You die with an outlaw. And that's where he ended. And that's life. That's Proverbs. Who you roll with is going to determine where you go. Your friendships determine your future because you will be like them and you will reap what they sow for better or worse. If you walk with the evil, you will stumble in their darkness. If you walk with the wise, you will become wise. Walk in the way of the good. Keep to the paths of the righteous, for the upright will inherit the land. Those of integrity will remain on it. That's the Bible, right? Now, let me note this. Does that mean you should always get away from every bad person in the whole world? You can't do that. And the book of Proverbs is written for real life. And that's why the book of Proverbs prepares you for every kind of person, because wherever you work, wherever you live, you're going to run into every kind of person. You got to interact with everybody. In your office alone, there are sinners, mockers, fools, swindlers, seducers, angry people. They're all probably in your cubicle, right? All your coworkers, high school buddies, family members, roommates. They're all going to be around you. You're going to be surrounded by people making a variety of choices all the time. But what this book is talking about is who's in the inner circle. That's who you get to choose. We will always be around angry people. We will always be around foolish people. We'll always be around swindling people. But you get to decide your inner ring. No one's an invader in the inner ring. They're all invited. Whether you passively do it or actively do it, they're invited into your inner ring. It's interesting, a couple different words in Hebrew are translated friend. Two of them mean somebody right next to you. One of them means like the word domestic, like they live in your house, but they're not part of your family. That's who a friend is. It's someone who's right next to you. What does that mean? It means your decisions are made together. Your choices are evaluated together. Your path is together. And so your decisions mean a shared destiny. Your choices have the same consequences. They're the people you bounce ideas off of, share thoughts with. They're the people you roll with. You get to pick those people. Jesus did not slump into the 12. He didn't say, well, I didn't really want Frank in the 12, but he just kept hanging around. No, Jesus fasted and prayed all night, and he walked into a room of 500 people and was like, you're coming. You're coming. And he chose who's in the inner ring. Now, he was a friend of sinners. He'd have dinner with anybody. It didn't matter what you did. It didn't matter what a mess your life was. Jesus was glad to sit with you. So whatever you've been a part of, good or bad, evil, ugly, shameful, Jesus loves to sit with the sinners. But he walked with the 12. He selected an inner ring that our path is marching towards Jerusalem together, right? Another word that's translated friend is the one you love. That's what it just means. It's like love, but with a person at the end of it. It's the person that I love. That's who I roll with, right? I process life with. And here's the reality. No matter how famous you become, no matter how successful you become, no matter how great you become, you're probably only going to get one, maybe three close friends in your life. Proverbs 18:24 says, a man of many companions may come to ruin, but there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Did you see that? You can have a bunch of friends, but when trouble breaks out, a lot of your friends break out. Some of you were there in high school, right? You threw a party at your house, and then your parents came home, and everyone scattered, right? And then you realize, oh, I got about two friends that stayed to clean up, right? There's a friend that sticks closer than a brother. How do you know which one that friend is? The verb, they stick, for better or for worse. They stay with you when it's good or when it's bad. Now, some people cling to you because they're insecure and have no identity outside of you. That's not a healthy person. We'll talk about them in a second. But I'm talking about the friend that sticks with you because they love you and you love them. Circumstances will shape who's around you. Proverbs 19:4 says, wealth brings many new friends. And it uses the word for neighbor. When you get wealthy, suddenly you'll have all kinds of friends, right? People that want to be your companion. And a poor man is deserted by his friend. There's a bunch of people that will bail, right? But you get to choose the inner ring. You get to choose who's in the middle. How do you do that? I'll give you some advice here on the front end. You hang out with wise people. What you're going to find with friends is you want character and you want chemistry. I trust the way they make decisions, and we hang out and get along with each other. And the chemistry you discover through shared activities, right? They quote a movie and you're like, I love that movie. We're friends forever, you know? Or they compliment you. That's how a lot of women I know make friends. They're like, that dress looks amazing. You are my best friend. And it's like, oh, wow. It takes me a couple of years, but y'all, that's amazing. You just have a chemistry. We get along. He's funny. I like his humor. Oh, she's cool. I like the way she treats people. But then you look for character. And so here's what you want to do. You want to roll with people with character and have chemistry with a few of them. You want to walk with the wise, and you'll make a couple wise friends. You walk with the righteous, you'll get a couple righteous friends. So how do I do that? Let me, with the rest of our time, give you the characteristics of a good friend. Are you ready? And I want you to do two things. I want you to evaluate your friends based on this. Just kind of elbow them. You're doing good. Two out of three? No. You want them to be all six. And then I want you to evaluate yourself, because we may look at this and go, you know what? I've not been the best friend I could be. Here we go. Number one, you want a friend that is truthful. Truthful. Proverbs 29:5 says, a man who flatters his neighbor spreads a net for his feet. When I read that Proverbs, you know what I think about? I think about American Idol. You remember that show, American Idol? And always at the beginning, they would have those one or two people that can't sing at all. I hated those shows. I can't watch awkward on TV. You can ask Donna, like as soon as they're up there and they're like, because the, I'm like, nope. I'm like, I can't do awkward and I can't watch. We're all laughing at you, right? That's the whole point of it. They're like, let's shame the weird person. And I watch that and the whole time I think about it, I'm like, who failed you? There were people in your hometown and they knew it. They were at your church. And they were like, she's going to come up and sing a song. And she's just like, nah. And they were all like, girl. And then she was like, I'm going to go on American Idol. And they're like, you should go. And you're like, you know what? You just spread a net for her feet in front of America. And you know why you did that? Because you don't care. Because you don't care. So if you have friends that always compliment you and never confront you, you want to know why? Because they don't really care. Right? They flatter you to make sure you like them, but they don't confront you because that might threaten their standing in your eyes, and they're not willing to threaten that. And so they're willing for you to be ashamed by some of your flaws rather than confront you. That's why when we talk about friends, people always say that. A true friend is the one who will point out when you got something in your teeth, right? They will point out a flaw, like, hey, man, you got to fix it, right? Why do they do that? Because they are invested in your best interests. You want a friend that's looking out for you, right? That's Proverbs 27. Better is an open rebuke than hidden love. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. Profuse are the kisses of the enemy. Oil and perfume make the heart glad. The sweetness of a friend comes from their earnest counsel. That's what you want. What's sweet about a friend is one who has earnest counsel. They're giving you advice. Why? Because they care. They're invested in your future. They want you to do good. And so you can trust them. Those are faithful wounds. Why? Because they're constructive, not destructive. I'm not talking about being around that person that's constantly cutting you down. That's what Proverbs 27:17 is about. Iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. You would use iron to sharpen iron, but you wouldn't hit it against the grain. That breaks it down. You go with the grain. Why? To sharpen it up. You don't need to be about a friend that's constantly breaking you down. You get around a friend that is pointing out some flaws in your character. Why? To build you up. You need that kind of person. Are they easy sometimes? No, but are they good for you? Yes. Some of you will never get in shape physically without a friend like that, right? Some of you will never see yourself clearly without a friend like that. I remember in college processing some thoughts with a guy in a car, and I remember him saying to me, you strike me as a guy who loses perspective easy. And I'm like, you strike me as someone I'm about to strike. Like, how dare you? You don't know me. But what I realized was, He loved me enough to be honest with me. And you know what? He was right. He was right. And I grew more as a result of that friendship than all the people that tell me that I'm fine, right? And so you need that truthful friend. People say that all the time. Who's a good friend? A friend is someone who accepts you just how you are. And that is absolutely half right. A friend is someone who loves you just like you are, but loves you too much to let you stay there. That's a true friend. A friend is someone who's going to love you right where you are, but loves you way too much to let you stay there. That's the person you need. I have some friends like that. I know I can call, and they will say hard things to me, but it's because they love me. They're invested in my good, so earnest is their counsel, and faithful are their wounds. I am better as a result of those men. Do you have people like that in your life? That you know as you come to them and say, do you think this relationship's a bad choice? Do you think this decision's unwise? You know they'll be straight with you. Or do you have friends that will just amen whatever you're doing regardless? You don't need that. You don't need more fans. You need a good friend, and good friends are truthful. Good friends are also discreet. Discreet. This one kind of snuck up on me, but it's true. Proverbs 11:13. Whoever goes about slandering reveals secrets, but he who is trustworthy in spirit keeps a thing covered, right? Proverbs 14:28. A dishonest man spreads strife, and a whisper separates close friends. You want a friend that's able to keep a secret. Now, that doesn't mean that, like, if you're a criminal mastermind, they're, like, complicit with you in evil. That's not what this is about. But this is about you want somebody that you can process with and share some of your deep concerns with. And they're not going to go, oh, that's interesting. Whoop. You know, and you're like, what are you doing? Oh, nothing. And they're just sort of sending it out to the world. You want someone that'll keep a secret, right? That they will let you process internally some of your unrefined thoughts that maybe you don't mean, or some of your feelings that are vacillating before you find the right path. You need that person who will enter that space with you and won't share it with other people. Do you know why people share your secrets with other people? It's because they love themselves more than they love you. And so when you share your secrets, they see your secrets as a path to their success. Oh, I can use this information when I share it with other people. That'll ingratiate this person with me, right? And so I can use your private information for my advancement. That's not a good friend. And you go, well, I don't want a friend like that. Well, let me tell you the secret of how you find out if a person's like that. If they're always telling you other people's business, you think they're not going to do it to you? I had a friend like that in high school. I liked hanging out with him because he told me what everybody was up to and what everybody was thinking and all the decisions they were making. And it's good. It's fun to be, you know, the Bible talks about that like whispering is sweet. You know, you're like, oh, secret, secret, secret. And you're like, I know that about them. I know that about them. Oh, I can't believe she said that. Oh, this is so great. And then like a couple months into that, I'm like, you do this with even your best friends. You're doing this about me. And then I'm like, what have I told him? Who is he telling it to? And I realized after a time, I love him. I want the best for him. He is not in the inner ring. I can't share with him the secret recesses of my heart because he will throw it out onto the streets. And I need a friend that I trust. You need a discreet friend. Again, not so you can keep horrible, dark secrets. You got to pair these together. But someone that will let you process in secret and speak the truth to you in that place. For me, one of the greatest gifts I had in life was whenever I entered into ministry. As soon as I entered in, I watched 5 pastors I knew fall out of ministry because of moral failure. That I knew, not just in the news. And it scared me. And all 5 of them were guys that, of course, never would have thought they would have ended up in that place. But what happened? They were all different ways of stumbling in the dark, but they all started on the same path, isolation from friendships. Every single one of them began to isolate. And then they had a secret world, and that secret world got exposed. That's what happened. And so I learned early in ministry, the way to keep off that path is to get good friends around me who love me enough to be honest with me and who I can process the recesses of my heart with. And in College Station, I had every single week 2 pastors. We would sit and we would open up all the recesses of our heart, pray together. We would speak hard truths to each other. And we would walk out of that circle and go, you know, I feel safe in this circle and I feel strong. You guys are letting me process and making me better. You want a circle like that. They're hard to find. They weren't necessarily the guys I instantly had chemistry with. I've told that story before. Whenever I move into a new town, my wife and I, we go on friend dates. That's what we call them. was going out with everybody. And then you just kind of see who's going to be, people are going to land in different spaces. And I remember the first time I went out with him, I was like, man, what do you like to do? And he was like, man, I love to garden. And I was like, yeah, all right. You know, whatever, that's fine. We're probably not going to be friends. But I realized after a while, man, this guy was wise and holy. And I would benefit from being around him. And our friendship deepened because, man, he was on the right path. And as I got around him, he was discreet and honest. And I'm better as a result of that guy. And we don't garden together. But we walk the path together. And he's been a gift to me. And that's what you want. You want a wise friend, wise enough to give good counsel. That's the third one. Proverbs 14:7 says, leave the presence of a fool, for there you will not meet with knowledge. The wisdom of the prudent is to discern his way, but the folly of fools is deceiving. Verse 14 says, where there's no guidance, a people falls, but in the abundance of counselors, there is safety. I love it in the book of Philippians, Paul tells his young believers to observe those who walk according to the pattern we give you and imitate their faith. The word observe in Greek is skopos. It's where we get the word scope. He says, walk into a room like this and start to scope out. That person seems to have healthy friendships and a healthy life and makes good decisions. And I begin to move towards them. And early in ministry, I realized I don't really know how to be a dad. I don't know how to do that. And so I would see healthy students and I would get around their parents and I'd say, can we go to lunch? I want to interview you. And then as I got into ministry, I would see where my weaknesses were and I would look for people who were good at it. As I started a ministry, I had to do all this financial counsel that I'm like, I don't really know how to navigate this. And so I met some godly men that knew how to handle money and I would ask them, and I think you should do this if you're looking for wise mentors. I didn't say, will you be my mentor and walk with me and I can call you at any time and at any point we just walk together and you're my Yoda for all my days and I'm at your house always. Like people tend to do that and you're like, too much, too much. So what I would do is walk up to him and say, hey, can I have a few minutes of your time? I have a list of questions I want to ask you. Can I buy you lunch? Can I buy you a meal? And I would respect their time. Sometimes it took months. I would show up with some of these men. I would come with my list of questions to honor their time. I would ask them specific questions. I would take notes. I would thank them for their time. I would offer to pay for the meal, although they rarely would let me do it. I would write them a thank you note afterwards. And then I would ask them if we really connected with chemistry, can I call you sometime again later? And I built over time a ring of wise counselors, just gently walking. But that wisdom saved me so many problems, so many financial problems I was about to walk into that would have sunk the ministry. One of the largest ministries on the campus that I ministered on when I was a student, when I came back as a director, had folded. And it was because of some unwise financial decisions because they didn't have a ring of counselors. But I began to move at Breakaway from success to success. Not because I know how to handle money, I don't, but because I got around wise people and their path leads to brighter and brighter lightness. You get around the wise and you get around the holy. Chapter 12, verse 26, the one who is righteous is a guide to his neighbor, but the way of the wicked will lead them astray. You want a friend who walks in holiness, right? Now, when I say that, what I've realized with a lot of people is that when they start walking with Jesus, sometimes you look up and your friendship group is not walking that way. And you go, what do I do? Do I just ditch all my non-Christian friends? No, I wouldn't say do that. You hang out with them. But what I've noticed with a lot of people is you begin to create two avenues. When I was a student in college, I had good friends that I loved, but I realized with a lot of them, they weren't chasing after holiness the way I wanted to. They weren't interested in going to church. They weren't interested in serving. So I started getting involved in my church, getting involved in serving, and I built a ring here. And I still love these people. And some of them, man, pulled in and we became good friends and walked forever. Some of them, we just naturally realized our paths are going different directions. But you don't have to decide today, well, I better text a bunch of people and say, you're blocked, and ditch all my unholy friends. No. Jesus was a friend of sinners. He would sit with them. But his inner ring were the people who wanted to be right with God. And so I'm not saying cut off all these people, but I'm saying begin to cultivate this crowd, right? That I walk with the holy. You want someone secure enough to give you space. That's the fifth one. Verse 25:17 says, let your foot be seldom in your neighbor's house, lest he have his fill of you and hate you. That's such a good proverb. Some of us, that's so obvious. Others of us, that's like, what? And you need to learn that. You want a friend that's secure enough in your friendship to not have to always be around you. That's a codependent person that's unhealthy. You want someone that can stand on their own two feet, have their own life, love you, bless you, encourage you, be loved and blessed by you, but not guilt trip you if they didn't know where you were at every 30-minute increment throughout the day. That's not a healthy friendship, right? It's too much. So you want someone who's secure enough to give you space. And the last thing is you want someone who's loyal. Loyal enough to stay when it's hard. Proverbs 17:17 says, a friend loves at all time, and a brother is born for adversity. And that's really when you want a friend. We tend to have a lot of buddies around when life's good, but when the adversity hits, you want to have been cultivating friendships so that when the hard time comes, there's a friend that will stand with you and protect you. Abraham Lincoln, when he was young and just beginning his career, had a major political setback that he thought derailed his entire political career. And he had a romantic relationship go sideways. He slumped into a depression and became suicidal. And Joshua Speed stepped in, had to take all the knives out of Abraham Lincoln's house and the scissors, and had to sit by his bed and watch him and talk with him and counsel him and ride through the valley with him until Lincoln came out on the other side. Can you imagine young Lincoln, 20s, 30s Lincoln, getting so discouraged he thought about ending his life? How much would we have all lost because of that? You know why we got Lincoln? It's because he had Speed. We need you. God has put gifts in every single one of us that's meant to build up us. We need you. But for many of us, when we hit hard times, pity the man who has no one to help pick them up. You need to cultivate godly friendships that will sit with you in the dark, love you in the hard places, stand with you. We need those kind of people. David, King David, when he landed in the cave in the darkest point of his life, it says Jonathan came to him and strengthened his hand in God. And mighty David led his people. And from David came King Jesus. You need those friends that when you enter into the cave, you enter into the darkness, will stand there with you, will cover and protect you, will counsel and encourage you, and will walk you back into the light. You need those kind of people. And you go, well, Ben, I don't have them. Where do I start? Let me show you where to start. John chapter 15, Jesus said to his disciples, this is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, than someone lay down his life for his friends. You're my friends if you do what I command you. No longer do I call you servants, for a servant doesn't know what his master's doing, but I've called you friends. For all that I've heard from my Father, I made known to you. You didn't choose me, I chose you. And I appointed you that you would go and bear fruit, fruit that would abide, so that whatever you ask the Father in my name, he will give it to you. These things I command you, love one another. You want to know where to start? You start with Jesus. Because he says, greater love has no man than this, than he lay down his life for his friends. And he told him that because that's exactly what he was about to do. He said, you guys are going to scatter like bad friends. When they come to arrest me, you'll run. And when they beat and mock me, Peter, my closest buddy, you'll pretend you don't know me. But I'm going to give my life for you. All your shame, all your mistakes, all your failures, I'm going to take them upon myself. I'm going to bury them in the grave, and then I'm going to rise. And when I rise, it's not to shame you. I buried your shame. It's not to condemn you. I took your condemnation. It's to bring you love from me. I'm a friend that laid down his life for you. And then when you come to know me, I'm going to lead you to love us. I'm going to lead you towards the other people I'm redeeming, the other people I'm rescuing. So you may not feel like you have a friend in the world, but you have one in the heavens, and his name is Jesus. He gave everything for you so you can come to him even if you have nothing to give. He is the truthful, good, loyal friend, and his name is Jesus. You come to him today. And then you come to his people, come to us. Get involved here. Come to community group. Let us love you. Come to community group. Make some friends in this place this week. Join a door holder team. Get into a circle of people. I've talked to so many people here who said, man, I didn't know anybody. And when I started to serve here and it was less about me and more about caring for others, I suddenly was surprised to find I was surrounded by friends. I got the thing I wanted when I came to be a part of the people of God. Jump in with us. Jump into community group. Jump into door holding. And then walk together. Get in the Proverbs reading plan. And here's what I want to encourage you to do. If you're going through Proverbs, find somebody. Maybe find a friend here at church and say, hey, are you reading through the Proverbs reading plan? Let's text each other every day what we're learning. And you kind of have an accountability over text every day with that friend. Or recruit a friend if they don't go to this church. Say, hey, I'm reading through Proverbs all this next month. Will you read it with me? All you got to do is text in this and we'll both get them and we'll read them. And I'm like, did you read it? Not yet. Read it now, please. Okay, I just read it. What did you learn? I got this. I looked at this. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, you're my best friend. And then look at you. It's amazing. But let's get on the path of the rise, the path of the righteous together, and watch our lives slowly over time as we make healthy decisions together, move brighter and brighter into the full daylight. Amen.
If you were encouraged by today's talk and believe it would be uplifting to others, then be sure to rate us and hit subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you stream your podcasts. To experience other talks, videos, and live gatherings, visit us online at PassionCityChurch.com or download the Passion Movement app. And again, thanks for listening to the Passion City Church podcast.